Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry gave statements regarding George W. Bush's attack on Kerry's service to the country today. He also released a letter challenging George W. Bush to a debate on the Vietnam era and the impact of their experiences on their approaches to presidential leadership. In the letter, John Kerry says, "This is not a debate to be distorted through your $100 million campaign fund. This is a debate that should be conducted face-to-face. Republicans like to question the patriotism of Democrats who question the direction of our nation. They put Max Cleland in an ad with Osama bin Laden to question his commitment to the defense of our country." In Arizona, Judy Donovan says she feels desperate for a new president. In Tennessee, Robert Wilson says he finds Bush revolting. In Washington State, Maria Jurasek says she'd vote for a dog if it could beat George W. Bush. A subtext to this year's presidential campaign is the intense anger that many people are directing towards Bush, an attitude that has been growing in recent months. Fully a quarter of Americans tell pollsters they have a very unfavorable opinion of George W. Bush, more than double the number from last April. George W. Bush's service in the Air National Guard is still viewed as a political controversy, since Democrats have said that Bush shirked his duty when he left Texas and never showed up at a guard unit in Alabama. The White House released hundreds of pages from Bush's military records to try and quell the critics, but the records prove the Democrats' case more than they dismiss it. Shortly after Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski's arrival to a post at the Defense Department's Office for Near East South Asia, a policy arm of the Pentagon, a piece of NESA was broken off, expanded, and renamed the Office of Special Plans. She soon concluded that the OSP, a pet project of Vice President Dick Cheney and Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld, was more akin to a nerve center for what she now calls a neoconservative coup, a hijacking of the Pentagon. She left the military last March, the same week that troops invaded Iraq, started putting her real name on her web reports, and began accepting speaking invitations. "I'm now a soldier for the truth," she said. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK. 1-800-NATPARK. There's just too much to lose.
An aging UK rock group got a group of teenagers to stand in for them on the video of their latest song and scored their first chart hit for some 15 years. The Alarm gave themselves the pseudonym The Poppy Fields and persuaded a group of fresh-faced youths to mime their part. "They did it to show they wanted to be judged on music and not on their image and haircuts of 15 years ago," said a spokesman for the band. The single, 45 RPM, went into the UK charts this week at number 28.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
Ow! I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Anyone who thinks that labor unions go on strike just for the hell of it has never been on strike. Ask the 70,000 supermarket workers in California who are faced with bullying demands by the executives of Safeway, Kroger, and Albertsons to slash their families' health care benefits. When Safeway honchos refused to back off from this take-back, its 20,000 employees went on strike last October. The very next day, in an anti-competitive collusion, Kroger and Albertsons locked out their 50,000 workers. 5 months later, the hardships being endured by these workers are staggering. They get no unemployment compensation, no health coverage, and their union strike benefits are down to $125 a week. Ironically, it's hard for these grocery workers even to buy groceries on that. Many can't meet their rent and car payments, and the stress is enormous. The supermarkets are eating big losses, too, for California's consumers have rallied behind the workers and sought out other grocers for their food purchases. But the top executives continue to draw their fat salaries and enjoy Rolls-Royce health coverage, so they refuse any serious negotiation, even when the union offered a major concession that would have saved the corporations $1/3 of $1 billion on their employees' health plans. One reason the top dogs think they can stall and effectively starve out the workers is that they entered into a mutual aid pact weeks before the strike, agreeing not to compete, to share costs and revenues, and to act in unison against their workers. The state attorney general has filed an antitrust suit against the three, but they'll keep this stuck in courts while workers suffer. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a dispute about 70,000 workers, but a class war about whether corporations everywhere can simply reduce all of us to low-wage, no-benefit Walmart workers. It's a corporate war against the middle class. To help, go to this website, ufcw.org.
The chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings to our program. Boy, a lot happening this week. Ralph Nader says he's in. He's going to be running. Is this going to be an event, or is this going to be a non-event? I mean, is this going to be sort of like, Lyndon LaRouche is running, too. You know, to what extent is the media going to turn this into something? To what extent is this going to get traction? Is the Green Party, there's a draft Nader movement within the Green Party, are they going to have any success in getting him? A lot of interesting questions around that. Will he succeed in pushing the Democratic Party farther away from the DLC positions that Bill Clinton convinced them to embrace of getting deeper into bed, basically, with large multinational corporations and closer to the traditional populist roots that the Democratic Party has occasionally returned to, and that it certainly started with when Thomas Jefferson founded the party back in 1800 and called it the Democratic Republicans, or actually it was probably around 1798 or 99 that the thing actually got put together. How is this going to happen? It's interesting. Your thoughts on 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, our number. And if you have thoughts on that, but that, you know, we'll get into that as the program goes on. A lot of news today. Welcome to the program, by the way. This is Tom Hartman. It's 9 minutes after the hour. And we are broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations, on Sirius Stream 143, and beaming around the world on the Internet from radiopower.org. And those of you who are getting your web stream from other sources, I recommend, starting Monday of next week, radiopower.org may well be our sole source. There may be others that will pick it up from them, but radiopower.org. And we'll be revising tomhartman.com, our website, to show that, so you can pick it up there. Interesting comment here. In fact, speaking of radiopower.org, the Shelby of radiopower.org sent me this article from the Associated Press today, just, you know, talking about the Wall Street. It was the Wall Street Report. Share prices were narrowly mixed on Wall Street Monday, with blue chips edging modestly higher following Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan's remarks that U.S. consumers are generally Now get this. This is the core of the conservative worldview, which is take us back to Dickens. I mean, the dirty little secret of all of this is that the conservative worldview does not provide for a middle class. There is the wealthy class and there are the poor working class, and that's it. I mean, the very poor working class. You want to see the conservative vision writ large? Go to Bombay, go to Mexico City. Anyhow, Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan's remarks that U.S. consumers are generally in good shape thanks to an influx of cash from mortgage refinancings. You get this? The high priest of economics for this administration, well, not just this administration, you know, for our government. I mean, he was there during the Clinton administration as well, reflecting the same problem that I have with many of the Democrats. This core conservative worldview notion. I mean, I think every time I see these ads on TV for the companies that Ditech and LendingTree, you know, God bless them, they're taking advantage of an opportunity market, you know, a market opportunity. But isn't it a tragedy that we live in a society where that market opportunity exists, where there is so much demand for people to go deeper in debt just to stay alive, that companies can spend millions of dollars a week advertising on national television and be profitable? I mean, they wouldn't continue doing it if they weren't. Even with low, low lending fees. Anyhow, Chris in New Mexico has some thoughts on... You know, usually we go to calls a little later in the program, but this is... Oh, we got a mystery hunt for Bin Laden, too, I want to get to here. But Chris in New Mexico has called in, and Chris, this is a hot one. I mean, you know, this is a little bomb. There were two bombs dropped this weekend. We'll get to the other one in a few minutes. The Bush administration's typical thing of dropping things on Friday so they get picked up in the Saturday papers and nobody notices them. We're not going to let them get away with it today. But the other one was Ralph Nader on Tim Russert's show Sunday morning saying that he's going to run. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Chris from New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You are live and on the air.
Hey, Tom. Well, first, please, sir, could I have more? You know, I'm busily running around looking for my own Fagin here, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, Ralph.
It's rare you encounter somebody who's actually read Dickens.
Ralph Nader yesterday said... spoiler is a contemptuous term. Well, you're damn right about that.
Yes,
it sure is.
Let me flip this around, Chris.
Sure.
I think that they're actually. You heard my show on Friday, or maybe you didn't. I don't know whether you did or you didn't. Anyhow, on Friday, I was saying, Ralph, don't run. And I've been doing some thinking about this over the weekend, and have come to the conclusion that. Number one, Ralph is going to do incredible damage to his own legacy, particularly with regard to the institutions he's founded. I mean, Public Citizen and the Center for Auto Safety and all of these organizations that have basically gained credibility from their association with his name over the years are already talking about, you know, they're in trouble, they're worried, they're scared. So number one, he's harming himself.
Well, the whole thing is just, it's vaguely nauseating. It's not going to be a story. The man has, you know, coming out this late, he has no money, he has no real control of any organization, and he has no party. And, he's not going to make it on the ballot, maybe in one or two states. But to watch a man chase his ego, it's beyond narcissism. It's just vaguely nauseating. A man who, at one point, I think, had so much promise. It's kind of disquieting. It's like watching a person root in his own little.
But what if
gutter.
He does? What if he does succeed in bringing up some of the issues that really need to be brought up? That in the last couple of elections, frankly, have not been discussed by either Democrats or Republicans.
Well,
the fact that international trade is set up to benefit international corporations and screw workers regardless of the nation.
Well, I can't think of one issue that Ralph Nader has brought up that Dennis Kucinich hasn't brought up.
Right, but Kucinich is going to vanish from the national screen as soon as the Democratic primary is determined.
And so is Ralph Nader, to be sure.
Yeah, it's that's what I'm suggesting.
It's just, you know, it's just kind of sad, kind of disgusting that it comes to this. Now, you know, bottom line, I'm a Democrat, and if the man pulls 100 votes or 10 votes or one vote away from a person that can actually bring change and do away with the true evil that the current administration, which I believe is true evil, then, you know, he deserves nothing but contempt. I don't know. It's kind of bothering to me, but mildly. Beyond that, not much.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear from the Greens on this. Chris, thanks for the call. Sure. I appreciate your calling in and sharing that with us. The thing that rang the bell for me as I was watching Ralph on the show there on Sunday was he went into this rant about, and I may have the sound clip of this. I've got a couple of them here, and I can pull it up after the next break. But he went into a rant about how dare they, well, these aren't his words, but to the effect of, how dare anybody say that a third party shouldn't participate, and, you know, we have a history of third parties in America, you know, and it's a good thing, and blah, blah, blah. Well, yes and no, Ralph. The problem that he, you know, and I can't believe that Ralph doesn't know this, which is what makes me think that Chris is right, that this thing is really an ego trip on Nader's part. But the simple reality is that, and James Madison lamented this in the Federalist Number 10 in 1787, after they put together the Constitution. All of these guys, and Madison was the most outspoken and articulate about it, were very worried about the fact that they had created a system where no more than two political parties could successfully compete. It's called, you know, first past the post, winner takes all. It's the kind of political system we have here in the United States. And Nader said on Tim Russert, he said, well, nobody would ever think of telling a third party in Europe that they shouldn't participate. How dare they do so in America? Well, in Europe, they have a different political system. They have a system in most European countries called proportional representation. With the exception of Greece. And proportional representation is a system where if your party gets 12% of the vote, you get 12% of the seats in parliament. And your party gets to determine who those people are going to be. You don't vote for candidates, you vote for parties. Now, you know broadly who the candidates are going to be because the parties tell you. If they didn't, they would be at a competitive disadvantage and people wouldn't vote for them anyway. But you're not actually voting for the person, you're voting for the party, and you have proportional representation. We don't have proportional representation here in the United States. John Stuart Mill invented proportional representation in 1851. Those nations, those democracies, and at that time there were fewer than four or five democracies in the world. And the democracies that have come about since then, and there's now what? 81 full democracies, 141 nations in the world that have elections and elect representative governments. I may have my numbers wrong. It's 100 and, well, anyway, there's a bunch of them. I'd have to pull the piece of paper. I am constantly mixing that up with the total number of members of the United Nations versus how many are electing. But there's a bunch of them. I mean, you know, we've seen an explosion of democracy in the 20th century here. And the vast majority, there's only a handful of countries, there's only a half a dozen countries or so that don't have some form of proportional representation. Australia is another one. Like the United States, they don't have proportional representation. What do? They put an instant runoff voting. So anyhow, Nader says, well, in Europe, they would never think of telling a third party you couldn't run. Well, that's because in Europe, when a third party runs, it doesn't harm the other party that is the most closely aligned with it. And how can Ralph Nader be so ignorant of politics and history? I don't think he is, which is what causes me to think that this is an ego run on his part. It's just an ego run. And if that's the case, we're witnessing an all-American tragedy. an icon that many of us believed in and respected falling. And time will tell. We'll see how it plays out. 20 minutes past the hour, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
Oh, hon, it's cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Ugh. You'll sleep like a...
Okay, up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red 90?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Your right to vote. It's something that most Americans take for granted. But today, serious questions are being asked about how we vote. Machines are used to process 98% of the votes in U.S. elections, and that includes absentee ballots. How do we know if our votes are being counted correctly? Experts say we don't know, that machines conceal the voting process, that whoever controls the machines controls the election. What is the government doing to protect your right to vote? There is no federal agency that regulates or monitors the voting machine industry. There are no restrictions on who can make, sell, or service voting equipment. They don't even have to be U.S. citizens. And there are no mandatory federal standards for voting equipment. Even if there were, experts say that voting machines can be easily rigged and impossible to safeguard. I'm Lynn Landis. I'm an investigative journalist. Learn more about this issue at my website, ecotalk.org. That's ecotalk.org.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
My ex-boyfriend is now my girlfriend, 'cause there have been some changes made. My ex-boyfriend is now my girlfriend, He's made a simple sexual trade. He was a cutie, now she's a beauty. He was my husband, now she'll be my wife. Though it sounds a trifle strange, it was just a little change, and he and she are still the true love of my life. My
welcome back. Welcome back to the Real Free Speech Radio. Boy, Brad. interesting bumper music. Interesting bumper music. Great stuff, actually. Lest Ralph Nader entirely consume our show, we've got a couple of callers on hold, and if I can ask you to hold on for just a minute, there are just a couple of things that I want to just put on the record here in the few minutes we have in this segment, and then we'll spend the longer part of the last half of this hour talking about Ralph Nader. And I've got some Ralph Nader clips and Bill Richardson and Jennifer Grandholm and stuff. But just a few quick things here. Osama bin Laden, a senior Republican, has been quoted in The Independent, one of the newspapers in England, as saying that Osama bin Laden has been boxed into a 10-by-10 square mile area that is being monitored by a U.S. spy satellite, and that apparently he's been there for some time. This is in the mountains on the Pakistani-Afghan border, and so we can expect, apparently, to see him appear at just the appropriate moment for the Bush administration. And this story, there are variations of this story in various newspapers all over the country. This one from the Independent, independent.co.uk. Bin Laden and a small group of followers had been boxed in by U.S. and British special forces in the mountains in the Afghan and Pakistani border. And so, number two, William Pryor has been appointed. During the Constitution provides, see, this was back in the days when the Constitution was written, Congress would meet for a few months, and then everybody would go home for the rest of the year. I mean, you know, it wasn't a full-time job. It was citizen statesman. And so when Congress wasn't in session, the president had to have certain powers so that government could go on if there was an emergency. So if a judge died in office, for example, and there was a critical case, he had to have a judge. He had the ability to make what's called a recess appointment. That is, when Congress is in recess, the president can appoint a judge. And that judge is in until the next congressional, you know, until the next cycle, basically, you know, for a year or thereabouts. And then Congress gets to do its thing. Well, Bush has done this again. This is the second time in 5 weeks. This time, William Pryor. William Pryor, first of all, the Republicans are going, the Democrats, they won't let our judicial nominees. In fact, out of 177 Bush judicial nominees, the Senate has confirmed 171. That's 97%. By contrast, during the last 6 years of the previous of the Clinton administration, conservatives in Congress blocked a full 20% of President Clinton's judicial nominees. So, I mean, this is just utter nonsense. Secondly, here's some of the history of William Pryor, this guy that he's hostile to civil rights, women's rights, gays and lesbians, and opposes, he refers to the so-called wall of separation between church and state. He has said that the Voting Rights Act, which is, you know, it's the core of the Civil Rights Act, is an affront to federalism and an expensive burden that has far outlived its usefulness and should be repealed. These are his words. He goes on to say that Roe v. Wade is, quote, the worst abomination of constitutional law in our nation's history, end quote. These are his words. Same-sex couples getting married, he says, is the same as prostitution, adultery, necrophilia, bestiality. And he goes, this guy is off the edge. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Those who limit their consumption of fossil fuels would profit under a proposal to pay for clean air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Imagine you had to pay for the air pollution you create, but you also received compensation for other people's emissions. Would you come out ahead? James Boyce says most Americans would, except for big users of coal, oil, and natural gas. They would pay a net penalty. Boyce is co-editor with Barry Shelley of a new book called Natural Assets, published by Island Press. The book advocates a program called the Sky Trust,
which would be a trust fund into which fees for the use of fossil fuels that would be charged when oil comes off the tanker or coal comes out of the ground, that would be passed along in the form of higher energy prices to consumers. The fees that are generated that way would be put into a trust fund. The fund would pay out annual dividends to every man, woman, and child in the United States on the basis of equal ownership of our share of rights to the global capacity of the atmosphere to absorb carbon dioxide.
Boyce says you're entitled to clean air and you should be compensated by those who pollute it, but you should also pay for the pollution you create.
You'd end up with those who use the most, those who consume the most, who tend to be the wealthy, paying more into the fund than they get back in their annual dividend check, and those who don't consume so much getting more back in annual dividends than they pay into the fund. And about two-thirds of the American people would come out ahead, purely in pocketbook terms.
Boyce says a Sky Trust could be broadly appealing, and he says it would provide an economic incentive for consumers to curb their dependence on fossil fuels. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Have this two-party system, and there isn't going to be a third party running for the United States. In the past, third parties have always emerged after the second party has imploded. When the Federalists went down in the 1820s, it took a decade, the 1830s, before the Whigs came up. When the Whigs went down in the 1840s, it took a decade in the 1850s before the Republicans came up. And the Republicans have been there ever since. And the Democrats, of course, started with Jefferson. So, I mean, that's how it's worked.
One more thing, Tom.
Yeah.
What does that actually say about the Democratic nominee that Ralph Nader or the Greens would be a threat to them?
Well, frankly, I think, as I said, I don't think that they're going to be a threat. But you got tight races. It's really more a comment on our system, Steve, because what it says is that when we have a system where when a third party candidate runs, they harm the people who they agree with rather than the people with whom they disagree. So basically what it says, I guess, ultimately, if you want to look at it that way, is that the Democrats have more in common with Ralph Nader than the Republicans do. And that's really all it says. Steve, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Talk about Ralph Nader, but can I ask you a quick question about Rumsfeld?
Sure.
Considering history usually repeats itself, should we be alarmed about the future? Because I just saw him on TV shaking hands in Iraq.
And the last time he did that was, what, 87, when he was over there shaking hands with Saddam?
Yeah, you know what happened to our treasury and our soldiers since.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre. I'm not gonna go beyond that, but it's bizarre. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, now with Ralph Nader, in the context of political ideology, I have a question. You think it's apparent now that this guy's really unsafe at any speed?
Well said, Armin. Thank you. Thank you for the call, and thanks for the comment. And here's Ralph, his response.
They're not specific enough. We've all been accustomed to populist rhetoric. You see it on all sides of the aisle. Then they go to Washington, which is corporate occupied territory, and they meet reality. One way to gauge that is, what is the record? It wasn't particularly prominent in terms of cracking down on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse.
Yeah, and he's speaking not just of Republicans, but of Democrats as well. In fact, he goes on to say,
I would certainly focus on the Bush administration, because they're the incumbent regime. Number two, I said that if the Democrats challenge me, if they criticize me, I'm certainly going to respond.
Yeah. Now let me just very quickly here, and then I know we've got a couple more calls here that I want to get to. But very quickly, let me just read a piece of a news story. This is an Associated Press story by Laura Meckler. This was published, well, I'll give you the kicker in advance, okay, rather than the build-up and then the kicker. I'll give you the kicker in advance. The kicker is that this was published on October 27th, keep in mind, this is like the week before the elections, of the year 2000. And the article is titled, GOP Group to Air Pro-Nader TV Ads, hoping to boost Ralph Nader in states where he is threatening to hurt Al Gore. A Republican group is launching TV ads featuring Ralph Nader attacking the vice president. The ads by the Republican Leadership Council will begin airing Monday in Wisconsin, Oregon, and Washington, all states that are part of Gore's base and where Nader is polling well. The AP story goes on to say, Gore's supporters fear that Nader will throw the election to the Texas governor if voters who might otherwise vote for Gore vote for Nader instead. The ads feature clips of Nader from a National Press Club lunch speech on Tuesday where he laid into both Bush and Gore, though the ad only includes his criticism of Gore. Al Gore is suffering from election year delusion if he thinks his record on the environment is anything to be proud of, Nader says in the advertisement. An announcer interjects, what's Al Gore's real record? Nader says, 8 years of principles betrayed and promises broken. This from the Republicans. 1-800-TALK-YES. Kim is in New Mexico today. And say that again? Just Donna. Donna's okay. Hey, Donna, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I'm so glad I found you, and I just wanted to say I'm going to miss IE Radio, but I'm going to look for you on radiopower.org.
Yeah, we'll still be on the air, and if you're listening to us on a radio station, we'll still be on your radio station.
No, I'm on the Internet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I wanted to know if you happened to see that climate change article in The Guardian.
I did, and I wrote a similar one about 3 weeks ago that was published on commondreams.org and is on Internet sites all over the place. And I actually have two books that talk about that very issue, the shutdown of the what's called the Great Conveyor Belt or the Gulf Stream. Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight and the Edison Gene both talk about that. So I'm very familiar with the topic.
Oh, great. I've never seen anything like this. I didn't know there was a secret Pentagon report.
Oh, yeah.
And
Fortune magazine actually did an article on it about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, really? Well, this is so interesting because it sort of explains what we're doing. Why are we going to war? Why are we, you know, why are we doing this? And it almost seems like it's the end game where we have to go grab everything?
Yeah, it's prepositioning, and there are a lot of people who have been thinking that not just with regard to global climate change, but also with just, you know, all the world's resources that we need to be nailing. And this is why the Cheney energy meeting back in before 9/11 in 2001, from the few documents that we've been able to get squeezed out of them through this lawsuit that Judicial Watch held. Show that they were planning on carving up Iraq. They had buyers for Iraq's various oil fields, the oil produced by them, back in April of 2001, before 9/11. They were already, you know, this administration came into power planning to take Iraq. Why? Because Iraq sits on a sea of oil, to quote Wolfowitz, or Pearl, one or the other. And it is not only the world's second largest source of oil, perhaps the largest. Many people think that Saudi Arabia has overstated their reserves. In 1987, there was this huge sudden bump, increase in Saudi Arabia's stated reserves, and that was the same year that they started applying for World Bank loans. So people think that, you know, this is about that. But not only is it the world's second largest supply of oil, but it's also the cheapest oil. It bubbles to the surface, doesn't even have to be pumped because it's relatively virgin. The wells are still full. So, yeah, lots of stuff on that. Donna, what I would suggest you do is go to tomhartmann.com, click on the Articles on Democracy link, and you'll see all the pieces I've written on Common Dreams on this and similar topics.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to thank you. It just seems like, wow, it's coming up sooner than later, and what are we going to do?
It may. I mean, the Pentagon is predicting a worst-case scenario of 2020. There are some people, some climate scientists, who are saying we could be seeing it right now, that this would, you know, all the weird weather we've been having is the beginning of it. There are others who say it might take as much as 100 years. So we really don't know. It's not time to panic, but it certainly is time to do something about it. Thanks for the call, Donna. I appreciate it. 15 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartmann. Harry in Ann Arbor's on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES. Hey, Harry, what's on your mind?
Just want to talk a little bit about Nader.
Good. That's a hot topic here today.
Well, I suppose. But I bought a Corvair over 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was used at the time, had 40 miles on it, or 400 miles. Now it's got, I just went out and checked the odometer. I got 241,570.4 miles on it.
Well done.
All I've ever done to it is put shocks, exhaust system, brakes, a battery, and an alternator.
And you've been very careful not to get it in an accident.
Well, I haven't drove it much in the last 2 years. I've been getting a lot of offers on it. But he took that car off because it was unsafe. Mm-hmm. I could have went to the moon and back almost. And I think the Democratic Party, to be concerned about somebody with that little bit of respectability, in my opinion, I've been a Democrat all my life. But this year I'm going to write in for Pat Paulson.
Who's dead?
Yeah, he's dead, but I wrote in for him back in the 70s once because I didn't like Reagan.
At least vote in for Swami Vivekananda. You know, he's alive.
No, I'm telling you, if they're so worried about Nader, shame on our Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Shame on them.
Yeah, I don't think that they're, well, yeah, maybe they are. Actually, here's a quote from Senator Jennifer Granholm, her thoughts on this. Let me just share this with you.
Don't run. Your supporters can find a home in the Democratic Party, but to run would suggest or make us all worry that we are going to lose the election because you'd be taking points away from the Democratic Party.
The Democratic Party. Of course, Nader says,
any contributions that are made legally by any citizen in the United States will be accepted.
Yeah. In other words, he'll take... Even like the Republicans helped before. Don't you think, though, that this, Harry, that this is more of a comment on the two-party system in America than it is on
Oh, absolutely,
Democrats?
Absolutely.
I mean, we've got a broken system here.
Back when the Whigs were in charge and then the Republicans came along back with Lincoln and all them,
yeah.
And they broke it down to two parties. And it's just
No, it's always been two parties.
Yeah, well, it's been two parties of one kind or another.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. You know, you should be able to go out and vote for the person, and I don't know. I'm just very disgusted this year.
But see, here's the problem, Harry. We have at the federal level, now a lot of states and municipalities have taken care of this with instant runoff voting where you can get third parties participating. But we have a system where whoever gets the majority, if there are two people running, somebody gets 51% of the vote, then 49% of the people have no voice. If there's three people running And two of them each get 30% of the vote each, and the third one gets 40% of the vote, then those 60% of the people end up having no voice. We have what's called first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections. And
there's a lot to be said for the European system.
Yeah, for proportional representation of some kind.
Absolutely.
Or for instant runoff voting, which allows for third parties to be active and involved and vigorous in the debate without harming the party that they're closest to. And I think that what Nader's thing is, entrance back into this is doing, number one, I think he's going to bring some issues to the table that are going to be good. I would like to see him hold the Democrats' feet to the fire and point out the hypocrisy of the Republicans. Although, if he does, like Al Sharpton is doing right now, taking money from Republicans and money from Republican advisors, if he does like he did in 2000, you know, with the Republican Leadership Council running all these ads for Nader in the swing states and pulling votes away from the Democrats, you know, that is exploiting our broken system. I think that's destructive, but hopefully, you know, he'll bring some good to this. I think that and frankly, I think very few people are going to vote for him.
Well, I don't think there are either, and I'd just like to say one thing. My brother he's a devout Republican, but last election, he voted for Nader. So, you know, they keep saying, how many Democratic votes did Nader pull away? Well, how many Republican votes did he pull away, too?
Well, most of the polls show that it was about somewhere between 2-1 and 3-1 that he pulled from Democrats versus Republicans, and a little over half were what might be called generally are called independents. But of the ones who are either Democrats or Republicans, the other half, it was about 3-1. Between 2-1, 2-1, and 3-1, he was pulling away from them. But he did pull some Republicans. Absolutely, Harry. You're right. He absolutely did. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. It's 10 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman. You're in the real free speech zone, the real democracy zone. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission.
Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my wife program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, funny dude.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It was late in December, the sky turned to snow. All around the day was going down slow. Night like a river beginning to flow.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here, 5 minutes before the hour. Senator Saxby Chambliss contended that Senator Kerry, the front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination, has a weak voting record on military. The attack dogs are out. The surrogates for the president are there attacking John Kerry for his military voting record. No, he's not strong on defense. This is going to be their mantra. And they got Saxby Chambliss saying it. Max Cleland, who lost both legs and an arm in Vietnam. This is from the Associated Press here today. Senator blasts Kerry's military record. Former Democratic Senator Max Cleland lost both legs and an arm in Vietnam and was defeated by Chambliss in a bitter campaign Senate 2 years ago, it says, for the Senate 2 years ago. Slammed Chambliss for the attack. By the way, in that campaign, Chambliss ran ads that morphed that overlaid Cleveland's face with Bin Laden's face, back and forth, back and forth. Cleland and Bin Laden. I mean, if you can get this. And Chambliss. Well, here's what Max Cleland said. For Saxby Chambliss, who got out of going to Vietnam because of a trick knee, to attack John Kerry as weak on the defense of our nation is like a mackerel in the moonlight that both shines and stinks. And yeah, I'm telling you, this is going to be the Republican strategy. John Kerry, of course, reacted. He wrote a letter to George Bush this weekend. He says, as you well know, Vietnam was a very difficult and painful period in our nation's history, and the struggle for our veterans continues. So it has been hard to believe that you would choose to reopen these wounds for your personal political gain. But obviously that is what you have chosen to do. He said, John Kerry says, the president decided once again to take the low road of American politics. Kerry said, Saxby Chambliss on the part of the president and his henchmen decided today to question my commitment to the defense of our nation. And in his letter to Bush, Kerry called Chambliss's run against Cleland, quote, one of the most despicable campaigns ever conducted. Absolutely true. And if you think that was bad, wait a few months and see what Bush has got up his sleeve. You ain't seen nothing yet. You ain't seen nothing yet. 2 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Through a hole in the air from those ads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a block.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry gave statements regarding George W. Bush's attack on Kerry's service to the country today. He also released a letter challenging George W. Bush to a debate on the Vietnam era and the impact of their experiences on their approaches to presidential leadership. In the letter, John Kerry says, "This is not a debate to be distorted through your $100 million campaign fund. This is a debate that should be conducted face-to-face. Republicans like to question the patriotism of Democrats who question the direction of our nation. They put Max Cleland in an ad with Osama bin Laden to question his commitment to the defense of our country." Shortly after Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski's arrival to a post at the Defense Department's Office for Near East South Asia, a policy arm of the Pentagon, a piece of NESA was broken off, expanded, and renamed the Office of Special Plans. She soon concluded that the OSP, a pet project of Vice President Dick Cheney and Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld, was more akin to a nerve center for what she now calls a neoconservative coup, a hijacking of the Pentagon. She left the military last March, the same week that troops invaded Iraq, started putting her real name on her web reports, and began accepting speaking invitations. "I'm now a soldier for the truth," she said. In Arizona, Judy Donovan says she feels desperate for a new president. In Tennessee, Robert Wilson says he finds Bush revolting. In Washington State, Maria Jurasek says she'd vote for a dog if it could beat George W. Bush. A subtext to this year's presidential campaign is the intense anger that many people are directing towards Bush, an attitude that has been growing in recent months. Fully a quarter of Americans tell pollsters they have a very unfavorable opinion of George W. Bush, more than double the number from last April. George W. Bush's service in the Air National Guard is still viewed as a political controversy, since Democrats have said that Bush shirked his duty when he left Texas and never showed up at a guard unit in Alabama. The White House released hundreds of pages from Bush's military records to try and quell the critics, but the records prove the Democrats' case more than they dismiss it. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had. and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK, 1-800-NATPARK. There's just too much to lose.
A ferocious, carnivorous South American piranha has been fished out of London's River Thames, environmental officials said Thursday. The 4-inch-long red-bellied piranha was dropped by a passing seagull onto the deck of a boat. It was very fresh and had obviously only just died. You can see the marks made by the seagull's beak on its back, fisheries officer Tom Cousins said. Experts were quick to reassure Londoners that the Thames remains too cold to support such warm-water fish. For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Anyone who thinks that labor unions go on strike just for the hell of it has never been on strike. Ask the 70,000 supermarket workers in California who are faced with bullying demands by the executives of Safeway, Kroger, and Albertsons to slash their families' health care benefits. When Safeway honchos refused to back off from this take-back, its 20,000 employees went on strike last October. The very next day, in an anti-competitive collusion, Kroger and Albertsons locked out their 50,000 workers. 5 months later, the hardships being endured by these workers are staggering. They get no unemployment compensation, no health coverage, and their union strike benefits are down to $125 a week. Ironically, it's hard for these grocery workers even to buy groceries on that. Many can't meet their rent and car payments, and the stress is enormous. The supermarkets are eating big losses, too, for California's consumers have rallied behind the workers and sought out other grocers for their food purchases. But the top executives continue to draw their fat salaries and enjoy Rolls-Royce health coverage, so they refuse any serious negotiation, even when the union offered a major concession that would have saved the corporations $1/3 of $1 billion on their employees' health plans. One reason the top dogs think they can stall and effectively starve out the workers is that they entered into a mutual aid pact weeks before the strike, agreeing not to compete, to share costs and revenues, and to act in unison against their workers. The state attorney general has filed an antitrust suit against the three, but they'll keep this stuck in courts while workers suffer. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a dispute about 70,000 workers, but a class war about whether corporations everywhere can simply reduce all of us to low-wage, no-benefit Walmart workers. It's a corporate war against the middle class. To help, go to this website, ufcw.org.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
The Skeptman's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. Boy, we have the whole conservative agenda is one of taking us back to this Dickensian era, this era of a privileged few having extraordinary wealth,
and everybody else living in... I mean, this news story that was in today's Associated Press about how Alan Greenspan thinks that it's a good thing that more and more middle-class Americans are increasing the amount of the mortgage on their homes to maintain their lifestyle. That we're going deeper and deeper. It just epitomizes the whole thing. There's an extraordinary book out that I don't often, you know, recommend books. I often talk about books and recommend, but this is a short, straightforward, sweet, well worth reading. A brilliant American history lesson in it. Wealth in Our Commonwealth by William H. Gates Sr. and Chuck Collins. That's Bill Gates' father, and Chuck Collins. And Chuck Collins is our guest in this hour. Chuck, in this segment here. Chuck is the co-founder and associate director of United for a Fair Economy, UFE. His latest book, co-author William Gates Sr., is Wealth in Our Commonwealth, Why America Should Pay Tax Accumulated Fortunes. Chuck, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. Great to be with you.
Thank you. I thought this book was spectacular. First of all, one of the nice things about it is it's a short read.
Yes, we need more short books.
There you go. And as the author of a bunch of long books, I just submitted a book to Random House that'll be coming out on July 4th. That came in at 100,000 words, and they kicked it back and said, take it down to 70. We had to cut 30,000 words out of the book in a month and a half. Yeah, it's tough. The next book I write, I want to be a 30,000-word book. Anyway, that's kind of inside baseball. But you've got a great summary here of the history of the founders' ideas about wealth, and talk for a minute about that. What did they think? What was the notion back when this country was founded?
I think the founders were always trying to balance the act between economic liberty, you know, people being able to go out and start businesses, but there was this very strong undercurrent, a concern about our country having too great a concentration of wealth and power. So Jefferson, Madison, you know, the founders, and into the 19th century, people were always saying, we don't want to be like Europe. We don't want to have hereditary kings and queens and, you know, hereditary concentrations of wealth. That's not what America is. And so that's a very healthy impulse that really, for the first 100 years of our country, was very strong.
And in fact, there are no dynastic families left over from that time.
That's right. I mean, we don't have people going around saying, I'm the heir of George Washington, who was the wealthiest man at the creation of the country, and here are all of his wealthy grandchildren and children, and we're all electing them to office. I mean, we do have a few wealthy dynasties in the 20th century still kicking around, but...
Well, it really started with the Gilded Age. I mean, that was when the rules started changing. It was during the race to the bottom, the 1880s and 1890s, the charter mongering era, when states changed their charters on corporations, and corporations became the primary tool to aggregate wealth outside of individual families.
Yeah, and it's important to realize that the estate tax was a response to the Gilded Age.
Right.
It was the result of the populists organizing for a generation to get an income tax. It was people trying to shift the tax burden off the tariff and off of rural states and shifting it onto the more wealthy New England states. But even people like Andrew Carnegie and Teddy Roosevelt, on the other hand, were also concerned about this concentration of wealth and power. And it was Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis who said, we can have concentrated wealth in the hands of a few, or we can have democracy, but you can't have both. So there was kind of at that time, 100 years ago, a very rich debate about what kind of society we were going to have, how much concentrations of wealth are we going to have, and that was the impulse for passing the first income tax and inheritance tax.
Do you think the debate has died? Do you think that the sides of monarchy and essentially aristocracy, plutocracy, have won out? Is it over?
You know, I was talking to Senator Tom Harkin the other day. He said an interesting thing. He said, I doubt if the 16th Amendment would have passed today, the amendment that created the income tax. Hmm. That the commitment to the idea of progressive taxation has withered away. And I think part of it, what you're saying, getting at, is we're not having the kind of robust debate about the direction our country is going in that there was 100 years ago. I mean, at every level of the society, there was a robust debate about where are we going here? Are we going to have hereditary wealth and power dominating our country? And here we are 100 years later. We're not really doing that, and we're drifting more and more toward a corporate-ruled apartheid society.
Yeah, and the 16th Amendment, I mean, there was a four-year debate. That thing was proposed in July of 1909 and wasn't ratified until February of 1913.
It was really World War One that kind of pushed it along,
yeah,
because they needed to raise revenue for war.
Yeah, and
here's one of the ironies that
was one of the great PR. That was the whole beginning of the PR industry, and that's when we started fooling people. And that was,
interesting. It was about a year ago, just as really the day that the United States launched, an invasion of Iraq, March 19th, the same day. The U.S. Senate debated accelerating repeal of the estate tax, this inheritance tax. And I'm just thinking, gosh, it's unprecedented, historically unprecedented, to push for tax breaks for the super rich during times of war. If you go back and look at our history, we conscripted wealth during times of war.
Right.
Working folks were off fighting, and the wealthy were going to have, where it was viewed, the society said, well, you're obviously not going to, in fact, you're opting out in some cases of having to fight, but your wealth will be conscripted to pay for the war.
And we're fighting on behalf of your wealth. I mean, we're fighting to maintain a society that allows you to keep your wealth.
That's right.
Which brings us to the second point, and that is, how do you respond to those who say, oh, come on, Chuck. We're speaking, by the way, with Chuck Collins, who's the co-author of Wealth and Our Commonwealth, Why America Should Tax Accumulated Fortunes, a book that you should buy and read not just because of its discussion about the inheritance tax, but because it puts so much stuff in context. It's absolutely brilliant. Chuck, people say to you, okay, what you're proposing is the same thing Karl Marx did, from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs. You're talking about redistributing wealth in a way that is socialist. How do you respond to that?
Well, in some ways, my co-author Bill Gates is the person who's very well positioned to talk about this. He says, look, we're not fomenting class war here. We're talking about paying wealthy people who have 10, 20, $50 million and up. These are folks who have disproportionately benefited from the public investments that we as a society have made. We as a society, as taxpayers, have created this incredible fertile ground, property rights and research and protection, as you were alluding to, this notion that we protect private wealth. If you have that kind of wealth, you would not be able to have that if you were trying to create that wealth in another country in the global South. There's something about the way in which our society is organized that enables people to accumulate great wealth. And so paying an estate tax is essentially a appropriate levy for those who've disproportionately benefited.
But there are those on the other side who would say, what's this disproportionate about? I can get what I can, and I get mine, and I got mine, and now you want it. I mean, you're just trying to grab some of my wealth here. It's how they respond.
I get to do a lot of conservative talk radio. I'm always amazed at the number of people who call in and say, look, I made this money myself. I didn't get any help. I didn't get any government subsidies. I have to say, maybe we should pick you up and drop you into Madagascar and see how you're going to do with your effort to accumulate private wealth.
Yeah.
Would you be able to do that in another society that doesn't have a kind of market mechanisms and protections that we have? People live this myth. Underlying the estate tax, the move to abolish the estate tax,
which they call the death tax.
The death tax is a myth about success in America. How do people become wealthy?
Yeah.
And I would argue that, individual effort matters. People getting up in the morning and, applying their creativity to a venture counts for a lot. But it doesn't count for everything. And society, this is a way that society can retain a legitimate claim on these enormous fortunes. That, and the fact going back to 100 years ago, and what kind of society do we want to have? Do we want to have a society organized around inherited wealth and privilege, or new opportunity? Because too much concentrated wealth undermines opportunity for people who don't have wealth.
Yeah, you know, as many people who have started small businesses, a friend of ours started a business to produce a small piece of software that fulfilled a market need, and Microsoft came in and said, oh, that's a good idea, and built it into their operating system, gave it away for free, and boom, these guys were out of business.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of we have this petition called the Call to Preserve the Estate Tax, and thousands of people have signed it. People can sign it at our responsiblewealth.org. But what's interesting is that 1,600 people who are going to owe an estate tax have signed this petition. Now, why would they do that? Well, these are really interesting people. They basically say, you know, I couldn't have gotten where I am without public investment, without the society that I live in, and I should pay something back for that.
Right. But even larger than the estate tax, there's this issue that is absolutely not recognized by the libertarians specifically. And the conservatives who have been philosophically drawing their juice from Ayn Rand and from the libertarian fringe, which says there is no social contract. It is every man for himself. They misinterpret Darwin. I mean, you actually read Darwin. Read Origin of the Species or The Descent of Man, and Darwin goes to great lengths to point out that his concept of evolution is one that leads to increasing diversity, not decreasing diversity. That any time you have decreasing diversity, you have a sick system. It's called cancer in an individual organism, and yet they don't. They will not acknowledge that there is a social contract, and that this is not. I mean, we have to figure out, Chuck, some way to make it to, because this argument, nobody's been talking about this for 40 years. The generation that remembers this debate is dead or dying.
Yes.
And we need to figure out a way to clearly articulate this thing that was conventional wisdom from 1776 up until maybe 1950 in the United States, that there is a social contract and that we all who are successful in this country, however you define success, I mean, even if it's just, you know, making a living and drawing a paycheck, do so on the backs of everybody who preceded us in this society and all the rest of us who are helping support this society. And there is a social contract, as it were. Let's talk about that a little bit more when we come back from this break. And I also want to get into the details of this so-called death tax. So we're talking with Chuck Collins. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
People running around in circles, don't know what they're headed for. Everybody's crying, peace on earth, just as soon as we win this war. Straight ahead, knock 'em dead. Back your kid, choose your hypocrite.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Chuck Collins here, the co-author of Wealth and Our Commonwealth, Why America Should Tax Accumulated Fortunes, also known as Why We Should Have What the Cons Are Calling the Death Tax, and historically has been known as the estate tax since 1913 when it was first passed. And Chuck, let's just quickly knock down some of these arguments. These guys, first of all, I'm going to throw you some softballs here. This stuff is just, this is double taxation. I already paid taxes on this income, I paid income taxes on it, and now you want to tax me on it when I die.
Most of the wealth that's being taxed by the estate tax is appreciated stocks and land and property, wealth that has never been taxed before.
Seriously?
The bulk of the assets, because you're taxing people who are, starting at $1.5 million and up. Where is that wealth held? It's held in real estate and stocks that have appreciated. So 70-80% has never been subject to any form of tax. It's just appreciated wealth.
I've been paying dividend taxes. Won't I pay capital gains? Wouldn't I pay capital gains tax on this if I sold it?
If you passed it on to your kids, there's a thing called step up in basis, meaning that the clock kind of gets reset. You don't have to pay a capital gains tax.
Well,
if you sell it while you're alive, that's true.
Yeah. Okay, some argue that the estate tax is unfair because it punishes successful people.
Well, there's a whole frame there, which it's hard to take on in a phrase, but I guess I would argue that it is the cost of growing wealth in this country for all the protections and benefits. It's not a punishment. People can look at any tax as punishing. But the fact is, we do need to figure out a way to pay for the services that you and I benefit from. The estate tax is the most progressive tax. It's paid by those most able to pay, dead multimillionaires. That's right. Who pays the estate tax.
Yeah. Now, what about all these family farms that are going to vanish?
That is one of the biggest canards. A number of investigative reporters have asked the pro-repeal, the people who want to get rid of the tax, the American Farm Bureau, to show one example of a farm that has been lost because of the estate tax. And they have not been able to produce a single example. And at the same time, the National Farmers Union, that represents 300,000 real farmers, has said, stop using us as your fig leaf to justify abolishing the tax. Reform it, but don't abolish it.
Okay. And what are the four easy steps people can take if they want to help preserve the estate tax?
Well, we have some information on the web that you can find at responsiblewealth.org. The thing is, President Bush, the thing with
got
the estate tax...
A little less than a minute here.
Yeah, okay. The estate tax, the Bush agenda is to make it permanent, make repeal permanent. So you need to let your U.S. senator in particular know, don't make the estate tax permanent. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area on March 10th, we're going to get together and do education and lobby day. But visit responsiblewealth.org, check out the Estate Tax Action Center, sign our call to preserve the estate tax. It's a petition that anybody can sign, and that will put you on our Action Alert Network.
And
that will help make a difference.
And this is the cost of democracy, folks. I mean, that's just absolutely the bottom line. Chuck Collins, the author of Wealth and Our Commonwealth. Thanks for being with us today, Chuck.
Thanks for doing the show. Getting the word out.
Yeah, my pleasure. We're going to keep on keeping on here. It's published by Beacon Press. You can find it in bookstores all across the United States. Chuck Collins. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Those who limit their consumption of fossil fuels would profit under a proposal to pay for clean air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Imagine you had to pay for the air pollution you create, but you also received compensation for other people's emissions. Would you come out ahead? James Boyce says most Americans would, except for big users of coal, oil, and natural gas. They would pay a net penalty. Boyce is co-editor with Barry Shelley of a new book called Natural Assets, published by Island Press. The book advocates a program called the Sky Trust,
which would be a trust fund into which fees for the use of fossil fuels that would be charged when oil comes off the tanker or coal comes out of the ground, it would be passed along in the form of higher energy prices to consumers. The fees that are generated that way would be put into a trust fund. The fund would pay out annual dividends to every man, woman, and child in the United States on the basis of equal ownership of our share of rights to the global capacity of the atmosphere to absorb carbon dioxide.
Boyce says you're entitled to clean air and you should be compensated by those who pollute it, but you should also pay for the pollution you create.
You'd end up with those who use the most, those who consume the most, who tend to be the wealthy, paying more into the fund than they get back in their annual dividend check, and those who don't consume so much getting more back in annual dividends than they pay into the fund. And about two-thirds of the American people would come out ahead, purely in pocketbook terms.
Boyce says a Sky Trust could be broadly appealing, and he says it would provide an economic incentive for consumers to curb their dependence on fossil fuels. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My my fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Times are tough on an honest heart. People don't follow through. It's what they start. Crying eyes looking at me. Making promises they never keep, but I keep looking for.
Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman. Greenspan, Alan Greenspan, the cult member of, who's the initiate of Ayn Rand, has not only today implied that it's a good thing. He said that, the American middle class is in good shape. Why? Because they're taking more and more money out of the value of their homes through increasing home equity loans, second mortgages, third mortgages, consolidation mortgages. And that's holding the economy together. But he also warned Friday, this last Friday, against resorting to protectionist cures to deal with job losses. This from an Associated Press story by Martin Kreisinger. Greenspan says protectionism no cure for job losses. Greenspan said that upgrading educational opportunities for low-skilled workers in America was the best way to deal with increased global competition. Yeah, let's teach them how to be X-ray technicians. No, wait a minute. They're doing that in India. Well, let's teach them how to be software engineers. Well, no, I'm sorry, they're doing that in India. Let's teach them how to make those rare earth magnets that are necessary for the guidance systems of missiles. I'm sorry, wait a minute. The company that makes those in Valparaiso, Indiana, was bought by the Chinese, closed, and moved to China. So now we have to buy them from them. Don't you get it? I mean, it's what are you going to train people for? What are you going to train people for? Ultimately, when you get down to it, I mean, a nation must have, just like a community must have, a certain level of self-sufficiency. What we are seeing right now on a worldwide scale is the same thing that we were seeing on a statewide scale in the 1950s, after the, I think it was 1947 that the Taft-Hartley was passed, the law that made it possible for southern states to say that, or any state, but it was the southern states that did it, states that has historically had relied on slave labor. No offense if you're living in the South, but that's the way it was, to say that you didn't have to join the so-called right to work. You don't have to join a union if the shop is a closed shop. You can't have a closed shop. And so the race to the bottom among the states began. And now you're seeing a worldwide version of this.
And you see, it's the same thing as a small community and having a Walmart coming in and inhaling all of their local businesses. It's the same thing as China inhaling all of our jobs. I mean, this is all the same thing. Greenspan says, and I quote, "There is a palpable unease that businesses and jobs are being drained from the United States with potentially adverse long-run implications for unemployment and the standard of living of the average American," end quote. Yes! Eureka! What does he offer as a solution? Nothing. He says, "This here, history clearly shows our economy is best served by full and vigorous engagements in the global economy." I'm sorry, Mr. Greenspan. History shows the opposite. History shows that if you're going to trade with other nations, and if you're going to that you do it in ways that benefit you, and that they will negotiate to do it in ways that benefit them, and somewhere in the middle, you will achieve an appropriate balance, an appropriate compromise. It's called negotiating. You don't just kick open the doors and say, okay, we're going to let the multinational corporations make all the decisions, reap all the benefits. Doesn't matter about nations. Similar, and the same thing at a local community level. Local communities must have the power to say to big box retailers and other predatory corporations, no, you can't come in our community. We want to keep our dollars here. We don't want them vacuum cleaned out every night, pushing a button at midnight, and all the dollars go to Chicago, to McDonald's headquarters, or to Bentonville, Arkansas, to Walmart headquarters, or like that. Don't want it. What's it going to take to make this happen? It's going to take political will, which, of course, brings us back to politics, which brings us back to the callers who are stacking up here. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. 21 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman radio program. And Steve in New York is on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yes, hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm alive and kicking. What's up?
Okay, well, I'd like to address the Nader issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a secretary of the Green Party here in Ulster County in New York State. As a matter of fact, I got into the Green Party back in 2000 almost exclusively because Ralph Nader decided to run. And as someone who had admired him for many years, as a matter of fact, I was back in the mid-80s with the committees of correspondence when the Green Party was just beginning to form. And I was not very impressed at the time with a lot of the factionalism and such. And it was really somebody like Nader whose national reputation and speaking clearly and forthrightly on the issues that made me decide to get back with a party. I had been enrolled as an independent for quite some time.
Steve, are you now part of the draft Nader for the Greens faction or the please Ralph go away faction?
Well, that's a good question. I'm probably as conflicted as almost anyone here in New York State. I had been a member of the state committee. I'm not now. When I ran for local office, I backed off of that responsibility. The state committee in New York State has voted last month at their meeting roughly about 120 in favor of drafting Nader, about a dozen or so against it, and a dozen abstaining. Their plan, and I believe the Greens down in Florida, are interested in putting Nader's name up for nomination, nominating him and having him run as the endorsed Green Party candidate, even as he runs as an independent. We understand that, you know, Ralph...
Simultaneously.
Well, yes. I mean, there is a problem with that, and I think Ralph may have been a little disingenuous when he said that the June convention of the Greens is too late to do things. I mean, he knew that a year ago. I mean, that's when the Greens hold the convention. But, hey, the Democrats hold theirs in the summer, too. Ralph could have run actively if he really wanted to back early in 2003 and got the ball rolling, whether as a Green candidate or as an independent
candidate. So how do you think this is all going to shake out, Steve?
Well, as I say, if a Green is nominated, it's going to be very difficult for a Green such as myself who still have great respect for Nader. You know, I saw him on Meet the Press. I heard his press conference today on C-SPAN 2. When I listen to the guy,
So you got Nader as an independent, and you got David Cobb, for example, running as a Green.
Yeah, running a safe state strategy, which
you're going to have a hard time figuring out who to vote
for.
Yeah,
and I think others do. But before I forget, I do want to bring up one thing, and this is to you. I mean, I respect how factual you usually are. Every now and then, I might catch you missing a date by a year or something like that, and that's really small potatoes. But when you brought up this RLC ad thing from 2000, and I think mm-hmm. it was brought up originally on Friday afternoon, Greens such as myself get angry. During the whole 2000 campaign, I don't think anybody was on the newsgroups more than myself defending Nader against statements like, well, Ralph said that there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. And he never said that. He said there were small differences that aren't as important as the many similarities. This RLC ad thing, either you implied or you seem to believe that Ralph Nader took money from Republicans. This RLC group is not the RNC. It's not an official group. It's kind of a small factional group of Republicans who spent money not on Ralph Nader. He got no money of that. These were pro-Bush ads attacking Gore. Because Bush
No, these were not pro-Bush ads. These were anti-Gore ads.
Well,
and they were
pro-Nader
ads.
No, they were not to support Nader.
Well, they showed a picture of Ralph Nader.
They did.
Ralph
didn't take the money, and he wasn't in favor of the ads. He didn't support them. In fact, when he was asked, well, what can you do? He says, legally, there's nothing I can do. I don't like them, but they have every right. They took the speech. The speech was what I said. Of course, they left out my attack against Bush. But what they said was factual, so there's nothing legally I can do about it. And they ran the ads rather than running. They couldn't run Bush criticizing Gore because no one would believe Bush, but people would believe Nader attacking Gore. So in effect, it's like if I'm standing on a street corner and you robbed a bank and you put the stolen money in my pocket while I wasn't looking and I didn't know about it and the cops came up to me and arrested me. How can I be responsible for something that I was not involved in? The Republicans spent
Steve, I think you're splitting hairs here. Number one, I'm not saying that Ralph Nader is in any way responsible for the Republicans exploiting the fact that we have a two-party system and he's going to be the spoiler he was the spoiler with the Democrats in 2000. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that he's responsible for that. I'm saying he should have, you know, that we all have learned that lesson. And that when Ralph Nader sat there on Sunday morning with Tim Russert and said, I can't, you know, in Europe nobody would question why there should be a third party. I don't see why people are questioning me now. I had to say either this guy is lying to us or he's ignorant of how the American system works. Which is it?
Or he knows how the first past the post system works, and we've been
then,
fighting.
Then
for
why
years.
Would he say such a thing?
Well, we've been fighting for years for proportional representation and instant runoff voting, as you've mentioned.
Of course.
And it's the same thing as saying, well, you know, we have to support slavery here in 1850 something because it exists, it's in the Constitution, and since it,
no,
it
no,
since
no,
we
no.
can't
it's
change
it's a straw
it,
man. Well, no, come on. Let's talk about Ralph Nader here.
Okay. I when I hear Nader talk, when he said he was going to run, part of me. And I'm sure I can't speak for all Greens. I speak to many Greens. We're as conflicted right now probably as anyone. As you said, if we have to choose between voting for an independent Ralph Nader, who we admire and respect, and certainly more than any one person that I can think of in the last 4 years has helped build the party, our numbers in New York have grown 600-800% across the nation, 30% as a party. He's helped build local organizations and state organizations. He's helped advance a lot of our issues.
Is he going to harm it by doing this here?
He very may well, to the extent that if he does run an independent campaign while Greens are trying to run a campaign, he'll get fewer votes as an individual. The party will
and
get
so
fewer
will the Greens.
Votes. Now, if the Greens do wind up nominating him and he winds up running as a combined independent and Green candidate, which I have heard and I've read on some of the correspondence that goes amongst Greens in our news groups and listservs and such, that there is a strong effort to nominate him. Nader has not said that he would turn down. As a matter of fact, the impression seems to be from several people that if the Greens draft him, if they're enthusiastic, that was his big complaint, that the Greens are conflicted. Some want to run an all-out campaign. Some want to run a safe states campaign. Some want to run no candidate.
No, I got it all, Steve. Okay, Steve, I think I've got your point. I got to move along. We got another caller here, and but thank you for the call. Thank you for making those points. This is really a complex issue. Ultimately, for the Green Party, it's got to be a terribly complicated issue. I got an email here from the Vermont Green Party. I'm on their listserv, on their email list. Those of you who listen regularly know that I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. And Greens welcome Ralph Nader's entry into the presidential race today as an independent candidate, saying that Mr. Nader will take positions and raise issues of vital urgency in the 2004 race for the White House. Many states' Green Party affiliates have not conducted their primaries or caucuses, and it's a possibility some states would choose Mr. Nader as their nominee. That a large write-in or draft campaign could achieve success at a national level, there's still a possibility that the Green Party of the United States could nominate Ralph Nader. And this is what the Vermont Greens are saying to themselves, saying to each other. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number 13 minutes before the hour. Here, this is Tom Hartman, and Marianne from California is on the line. Hey, Marianne, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Mr. Hartman. It's so good to speak to you. And so you're talking about this voting and how they vote differently in different places. And so here, not only do we not vote for a party, but for a person. And so then, once we vote for a person, we come up against the Electoral College. Like
at the level of the president, yeah.
Pardon? Yeah, like with Gore. He had, what, 50,000 or was it 500,000
more votes? 500,000 more votes.
500.
A half
okay.
A million.
And so here we have the Electoral College. If it weren't for that, so is there any way that, because now if they could identify those 500,000 votes and say you were one of them, like you said, you voted for Gore, but if you had voted Democrat and you found out your vote was one of those, would you vote again for the president?
Yeah, well, the Electoral College clearly is something that was put into the Constitution in a time when it took 3 days on horseback to get from southern Georgia up to Washington D.C. I mean that's the Electoral College is an artifact of the 18th century. And the problem is that it's in the Constitution.
Yeah.
That the Constitution was amended, I think around 1800, right after the election, where we used to have a situation where whoever got the most votes became president, the second most votes became vice president, and you ended up with a situation where you had Thomas Jefferson as the vice president of the John Adams, and they hated each other, and Jefferson was forming the Democratic Republican Party, and Adams was the head of the Federalist Party, and it was a terrible mess, and everybody said, hey, this isn't going to work for democracy, and so they amended the Constitution, and they came up with this thing, the Electoral College, that would accommodate essentially a two-party system, although a two-party system isn't laid out in the Constitution. And the problem is that in order to get a constitutional amendment passed, you have to have the constitutional amendment, first of all, make it through the House and Senate, and I believe it requires a two-thirds vote of the Senate, and then two-thirds of the states, every one of the states has to vote on it. And that's why there's only been, fewer than 30, I don't remember the exact number, of amendments in all the history of the United States. The Equal Rights Amendment that simply says that women are equal to men in the United States still hasn't been ratified because they're a couple of states short. So it's going to be a challenge, Marianne. It's going to be a real challenge to get that out of the Constitution. I don't think it's going to happen. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman. I'll be right back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't.
But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1. $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27. $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15. $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman Show.
The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brain Shrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters.
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm just the same fool, the old fool, the one fool, but you won't fool no more. At least not the way that you fooled the last fool you fooled before. So let the next fool, the new fool, the a fool, you will fool for sure. Just know.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. America Radio Network. 27 is the total number of amendments to the Constitution as of this little book that I've got, the U.S. Constitution and facts about it. kind of a publication date. I think it's pretty current. I just bought it last year. Anyhow, the last one was about congressional salaries. It was passed in 92. But in response to Marianne's question, it was the 12th Amendment. And it was passed. It was proposed. Where did it go here? The 12th Amendment. It's one of the most convoluted things here in the Constitution. It was proposed on December 9th. 1803. See, this is a result of they often referred to the election of 1800 as the Revolution of 1800, because there was actually. Oh, anyhow, it was proposed on December 9th, 1803, and ratified on June 15th of 1804. There was actually a fear that was fairly widespread that John Adams would refuse to leave the White House, that there may be a schism or a split. And of course, there was all these multiple pollings and all this stuff. I mean, it was just a whole mess. And Jefferson's worldview was so profoundly different from Adams. And I think one of the great tragedies, I think, of our day is that this book about John Adams has been so well promoted and yet completely brushes over what a fascist Adams was. I mean, his whole thing with the Alien and Sedition Acts, that really that was what brought down his administration, that he tried the first Patriot Act, that he was anti-democracy with a small d. And Jefferson, and the other tragedy is that Fawn Brody's book, Thomas Jefferson, an intimate biography, is no longer in print. You can find it easily on Amazon. You can buy a copy for 10 cents. But Fawn Brody's biography of Thomas Jefferson, which was published in 1974, is, I think, the best book on Jefferson that's ever been written. But anyhow, that most people just are not aware of these issues and of these debates. And so now the chickens are coming home to roost. We've got an electoral system that's broken, and we've got this whole thing coming all the way back around. Anyhow, 2 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
That Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I want to
different...
see you try the Afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry gave statements regarding George W. Bush's attack on Kerry's service to the country today. He also released a letter challenging George W. Bush to a debate on the Vietnam era and the impact of their experiences on their approaches to presidential leadership. In the letter, John Kerry says, "This is not a debate to be distorted through your $100 million campaign fund. This is a debate that should be conducted face-to-face. Republicans like to question the patriotism of Democrats who question the direction of our nation. They put Max Cleland in an ad with Osama bin Laden to question his commitment to the defense of our country." In Arizona, Judy Donovan says she feels desperate for a new president. In Tennessee, Robert Wilson says he finds Bush revolting. In Washington State, Maria Jurasek says she'd vote for a dog if it could beat George W. Bush. A subtext to this year's presidential campaign is the intense anger that many people are directing towards Bush, an attitude that has been growing in recent months. Fully a quarter of Americans tell pollsters they have a very unfavorable opinion of George W. Bush, more than double the number from last April. George W. Bush's service in the Air National Guard is still viewed as a political controversy since Democrats have said that Bush shirked his duty when he left Texas and never showed up at a guard unit in Alabama. The White House released hundreds of pages from Bush's military records to try and quell the critics, but the records prove the Democrats' case more than they dismiss it. Shortly after Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski's arrival to a post at the Defense Department's Office for Near East South Asia, a policy arm of the Pentagon, a piece of NESA was broken off, expanded, and renamed the Office of Special Plans. She soon concluded that the OSP, a pet project of Vice President Dick Cheney and Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld, was more akin to a nerve center for what she now calls a neoconservative coup, a hijacking of the Pentagon. She left the military last March, the same week that troops invaded Iraq, started putting her real name on her web reports, and began accepting speaking invitations. "I'm now a soldier for the truth," she said. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK, 1-800-NAT-PARK. There's just too much to lose.
An aging UK rock group got a group of teenagers to stand in for them on the video of their latest song and scored their first chart hit for some 15 years. The Alarm gave themselves the pseudonym The Poppy Fields and persuaded a group of fresh-faced youths to mime their part. "They did it to show they wanted to be judged on music and not on their image and haircuts of 15 years ago," said a spokesman for the band. The single, 45 RPM, went into the UK charts this week at number 28.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Anyone who thinks that labor unions go on strike just for the hell of it has never been on strike. Ask the 70,000 supermarket workers in California who are faced with bullying demands by the executives of Safeway, Kroger, and Albertsons to slash their families' health care benefits. When Safeway honchos refused to back off from this take-back, its 20,000 employees went on strike last October. The very next day, in an anti-competitive collusion, Kroger and Albertsons locked out their 50,000 workers. 5 months later, the hardships being endured by these workers are staggering. They get no unemployment compensation, no health coverage, and their union strike benefits are down to $125 a week. Ironically, it's hard for these grocery workers even to buy groceries on that. Many can't meet their rent and car payments, and the stress is enormous. The supermarkets are eating big losses, too, for California's consumers have rallied behind the workers and sought out other grocers for their food purchases. But the top executives continue to draw their fat salaries and enjoy Rolls-Royce health coverage, so they refuse any serious negotiation, even when the union offered a major concession that would have saved the corporations $333 billion on their employees' health plans. One reason the top dogs think they can stall and effectively starve out the workers is that they entered into a mutual aid pact weeks before the strike, agreeing not to compete, to share costs and revenues, and to act in unison against their workers. The state attorney general has filed an antitrust suit against the three, but they'll keep this stuck in courts while workers suffer. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a dispute about 70,000 workers, but a class war about whether corporations everywhere can simply reduce all of us to low-wage, no-benefit Walmart workers. It's a corporate war against the middle class. To help, go to this website, ufcw.org.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. If you're making a hamburger, this falls into the category of if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, does it make a sound? If you're making a hamburger at McDonald's and a manufacturing job is lost across town and you just get a job making flipping burgers, has a manufacturing job been created? Well, according to the new... That's a lousy analogy. But anyhow, according to the new economic report of the president... The latest edition, this is from the New York Times News Service, the latest edition sent to Congress last week, questions whether fast food restaurants should continue to be counted as part of the service sector or should instead be reclassified as manufacturing.
Yes, indeed. Well, we've lost 2.5-3 million manufacturing jobs in America. How many? Where can we get those back? Well, we're not going to get them back by building factories, so... Let's see. We got an election coming up here. We got to come up with some numbers. We got to change that. You've noticed how all the cons on TV are using the household index. You know, they're saying, "Oh, those numbers on unemployment, those are inaccurate." They happen to be the government numbers. Oh no, no, you need to be looking at the household index.
No, sorry. Trying to change the economy. So anyhow, the White House considered this idea of. Fast food jobs being manufacturing jobs, so important that they drew a box around it in the report so it'd stand out among the 417 pages of statistical tables and dry text. One of our alert listeners, when I'm a little off base, I really appreciate it when you folks set me straight. This is more recalibration. I had mentioned last week, we were talking about the three traditional ways that nations had been ruled prior to this extraordinary experiment of 1776 of people ruling themselves, which were kings, theocrats, and the wealthy, also known as feudalism, ruled by the rich. And I pointed out that the British coins have the initials on them for the Latin for something like the Queen rules by the grace of God. By divine authority. I didn't have the exact phrasing. And so Peter, a listener in Manchester, England. Hey, Pete, thanks for listening to the show, first of all. Sent me this email and says, all British coins have the following inscription in Latin on the head side. Quote, by the grace of God, Queen, Defender of the Faith. End quote. And then Pete goes on to note, the phrase defender of the faith was how the Pope described Henry VIII after he wrote a defense of Catholicism against Protestantism. Ironically, Pete adds, it was Henry himself who split the Church of England from Rome. Isn't it fascinating, the subtleties, of history, all these little... Okay, George Bush has up to $150 million. He's hit a new milestone. You'll recall in the last election, Bush outspent Gore about 2-1. He spent just a little over $100 million. Gore spent just a little under $50 million. Gore keeping to the federal election requirement limits, and Bush not. This time around, while the Democrats are debating and arguing and fighting over who's going to have $20 or $30 million, Bush has already raised $150 million, and the primary season isn't even over yet. So everybody says, oh, gee, his numbers are in the tank. Well, here, for example, Chicago Tribune. Headline, Bush losing favor among Illinois voters. Article by Rick Pearson. For the first time in his presidency, there are more Illinois voters of all political stripes who disapprove than approve of the job Bush is doing, and more than half don't want to see him elected to a second term, according to the poll. Democrats in the states were overwhelmingly rallying around Kerry, says this article. It goes on at great length about all the details of this, that, and the other thing. And to that I say $150 million will change a lot of minds. And he just has spent just a few million of this, just about $7.5 million just in the last week, putting together ads, making direct mail appeals, and laying the groundwork for a battle with the eventual nominee, to quote the AP. And don't count him down. Don't count him out. This is not going to be a cakewalk for whoever gets nominated. The Republicans have not yet started defining the Democratic candidate or the Democratic platform. They haven't started redefining George Bush. Yes, you know, things don't look all that great right now, but we are far enough out that just about everything that happens right now here in February, March of 2004, by the time November comes around, will have been forgotten. I mean, it's just political memories in this country are so short, and people are so short-term in their reactivity. So, now, here's a potential coming problem for the Democrats. Convention plan puts protesters blocks away. Are the Democrats planning on having a free speech zone? You know, truth be told, I mean, George Bush started this thing back when he was governor of Texas many years ago. Used to be traditional that people would stand out in front of the Texas State House, or the Texas Governor's Mansion, rather, and protest. They'd hold signs and things, you know, sort of like, you know, the old commons and the old tradition all around America. All around, the British are very big on this as well. It was in Hyde Park, the Trafalgar, no. I'm forgetting the name of the square and the little block. Pete in England will no doubt email me and set me straight. I've been there. Anyhow, of protesting, and Bush started when he was governor, whenever anybody was protesting against him, would round them up and send them off, you know, by force of police into what he called free speech zones, cages, basically cages, where they would be forced to have their little protest. And, of course, Bush and Cheney and Ashcroft have been doing this throughout the 3 years of Bush's presidency. Brett Bercy, who we've interviewed on this program, was arrested holding a anti-Bush sign as he was standing amongst hundreds of people with pro-Bush signs outside a Bush event. And he was arrested solely, the officer told him, solely because of the content of his sign. He wouldn't go to the free speech zone. Bad boy. I mean, what happened to the First Amendment that said the right of the people to peaceably assemble for redress of injury or to petition their government shall not be infringed? What happened to that? Here's the actual the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. No law shall be passed by Congress. Well, if no law shall be passed by Congress, then you think no politician can round people up. Well, Bush has been doing this and says he's going to continue doing it. It looks like it may be going to the Supreme Court. But now we notice here the Boston Globe, last Friday, published this article by Rick Klein, suggesting that the Democrats for the Democratic Convention have a preliminary plan for a free speech zone in a small plot bounded by Green Line tracks and North Washington Street in an area that until recently was given over to the elevated artery. The zone would hold as few as 400 of the several thousand protesters who expected in Boston late July. This is not a solution. I think what they're trying to do is actually come up with a place for you know, some kind of organized protest, because Boston is a very congested city. The Republicans are going to be facing the same thing in New York. And there are, you know, there's some speculation that over a million people may converge on New York to protest the Republicans. I mean, you're talking about tens of thousands, but thousands certainly will probably show up to protest at the Democratic convention. What are they going to do? There's a real conundrum. Officials of the National Lawyers Guild and the ACLU of Massachusetts plan to meet with Boston Police Department representatives to talk about this plan. Boston police say no final decision will be made for months and stress that they're open to input. The 2000 in Los Angeles, they had some problems. Less than a month before that convention began, a federal judge. This is really interesting. This is the 2000 Democratic convention. And contrast this with how Bush deals with, you know, what people can do when they want to, you know, when he shows up anywhere. The 2000 Democratic convention, less than a month before that convention began. This, I'm reading this from this article by Rick Klein in the Boston Globe. Less than a month before that convention began, a federal judge ruled that the designated area was unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional to have a designated free speech zone. Say what? It's already been ruled by a federal judge? Organizers were forced to move the area to a parking lot directly across the street from an arena entrance, in keeping with an earlier federal court ruling that any legal demonstration be allowed within, quote, sight and sound, end quote, of its intended audience. And yet, Brett Bercy was just convicted by Strom Thurmond's son, North or South Carolina district attorney or prosecuting attorney. No, the federal prosecutor, convicted of threatening the president for having a sign that said no war for oil. He didn't move to the free speech zone. What is happening to America? What is happening to America? How can we come back from this? 17 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartman. 9/11. This is fascinating. The 9/11 Commission. You know, the 9/11 Commission have been desperately trying to get George Bush to share with them facts about what he knew and when he knew it, like the briefings that he got just before and just after 9/11. I mean, we know. You know, there have been some of these things leaked that I believe it was August 6th in the PDB, the Presidential Daily Briefing, that George Bush was informed that al-Qaeda was attempting or intending in the very near future to hijack aircraft and use them as weapons against targets on the East Coast, perhaps in New York City and Washington, D.C. And his response, of course, was to tell John Ashcroft, who immediately stopped flying on commercial airplanes, and for himself, George Bush immediately took the longest vacation in presidential history, went to Crawford, Texas, as far as he could get away from Washington, D.C. Well, when he ran that one out, the attack still hadn't happened, and so he went to Florida, where he could hide out with his brother. And that's where he was, of course, when 9/11 happened. Now we discover that Bush has, and he's refusing to give these files to the 9/11 Commission, but it turns out he's already given them to Bob Woodward. Remember that glowing suck-up book that Bob Woodward wrote called Bush at War? Turns out that on page 132, Woodward gives the exact title of a highly classified three-page presidential briefing that was provided to Bush on September 25th, 2001. It's okay to give it to Bob Woodward. He's going to write something good about the president, but you can't give it to the 9/11 Commission. They might tell the American people something that the president hasn't quite vetted, as it were. 20 minutes after the hour, this is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Your right to vote. It's something that most Americans take for granted. But today, serious questions are being asked about how we vote. Machines are used to process 98% of the votes in U.S. elections, and that includes absentee ballots. How do we know if our votes are being counted correctly? Experts say we don't know, that machines conceal the voting process, that whoever controls the machines controls the election. What is the government doing to protect your right to vote? There is no federal agency that regulates or monitors the voting machine industry. There are no restrictions on who can make, sell, or service voting equipment. They don't even have to be U.S. citizens. And there are no mandatory federal standards for voting equipment. Even if there were, experts say that voting machines can be easily rigged and impossible to safeguard. I'm Lynn Landis. I'm an investigative journalist. Learn more about this issue at my website, ecotalk.org. That's ecotalk.org.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this. And here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
How many wrinkles in a pickle? How many hairs in a hair? How many waves in the ocean? How many crumbs in bread? But last but not least, baby, most of all, why do I mumble every time you call? Because you're strange to me, baby. Oh, you're good to me, baby. But I need you, stranger, baby. Please don't change. I know I belong to you.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Whoa, we got the button unpushed here. Yeah, just to say sorry about that. Here we go.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yes, indeed, my friends. Did you get that? Wait a second. I got to hear that again. That's it.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah, when we're talking about war, we're really talking about peace. Well, you know, isn't that kind of like fooling the people, Mr. President?
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once. Shame on... on you?
I think...
It fooled me. You can't get fooled again.
Yes. Time will tell, right? It's... Oh, my. And of course, you know, that classic moment when Bush couldn't remember who was the Prime Minister of Mexico, when Michael Moore, I think it was. No, it was CBC. This hour has 60 minutes. This hour has 20 minutes. CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation program, discovered that George Bush didn't know the name of the Prime Minister of Canada. And he kind of...
But the point I say to you is that, you know, if what you're suggesting is that... what I'm suggesting to you is that you can't name the foreign minister of Mexico, therefore, you know, you're not capable of what you did. But the truth of the matter is you are, whether you can or not.
You are. I'm sorry, this is like shooting fish in a barrel, and I probably shouldn't be doing it, but I'm having fun. By the way, 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937, if you have thoughts for the day. I've got a stack of stuff here, some interesting news that I want to share with you, and one last here, a thought from our fearless leader.
I believe that people who are going to commit crime shouldn't have guns.
Yeah. Therefore, we are opposed to, for example, stopping people from selling guns at gun shows that are unlicensed, and we want to destroy within 24 hours records of who have bought guns, and on and on and on it goes. It's very, very strange. Anyhow, the nation's governors are in town to meet with President Bush, and they want some answers. This is an uncomfortable week for the president. We all should send him some sympathy, a little bit of concern. This is a quote from the Center for American Progress. Looking to President Bush and his administration for more support on education, health care, and job-producing road spending is the agenda of the governors. They had dinner with the president on Saturday. It's a four-day annual Governors Association meeting. Kicks off today, Monday. And they plan to bring the president, quote, an agenda that underscores the gap between what they say their fiscally strapped states need and what they can expect to get from the Bush administration and Congress. Bush's budget would slash spending on the state-run Medicaid programs, as well as grants for community policing. Many of the 65 federal programs he wants to eliminate entirely have state impact as well. In fact, the Bush tax policy has really effectively been a tax increase. President Bush's insistence on cutting taxes for the wealthiest Americans has actually resulted in many Americans seeing a tax increase. As the Center for American Progress reports, the latest Bush budget would cut 3% from federal grants to states, a $16 billion decrease in state tax revenue. Struggling to keep budgets balanced under the federal squeeze, states have raised taxes by a total of $14.5 billion. This after 7 consecutive years of cutting taxes. The result, quote, millions of American individuals and businesses face tax hikes this year, that is at the state level and the local level, wiping out the savings that some taxpayers would otherwise see on their federal 1040. Yeah, that $100 or $200 or $300 you got back in federal taxes, you're going to pay $1,000. And state and fees and local and everything else. This is Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Those who limit their consumption of fossil fuels would profit under a proposal to pay for clean air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Imagine you had to pay for the air pollution you create, but you also received compensation for other people's emissions. Would you come out ahead? James Boyce says most Americans would, except for big users of coal, oil, and natural gas. They would pay a net penalty.
Boyce's co-editor with Barry Shelley of a new book called Natural Assets, published by Island Press. The book advocates a program called the Sky Trust,
which would be a trust fund into which fees for the use of fossil fuels that would be charged when oil comes off the tanker or coal comes out of the ground, that would be passed along in the form of higher energy prices to consumers. The fees that are generated that way would be put into a trust fund. The fund would pay out annual dividends to every man, woman, and child in the United States on the basis of equal ownership of our share of rights to the global capacity of the atmosphere to absorb carbon dioxide.
Boyce says you're entitled to clean air and you should be compensated by those who pollute it, but you should also pay for the pollution you create.
You'd end up with those who use the most, those who consume the most, who tend to be the wealthy, paying more into the fund than they get back in their annual dividend check, and those who don't consume so much getting more back in annual dividends than they pay into the fund. And about two-thirds of the American people would come out ahead, purely in pocketbook terms.
Boyce says a Sky Trust could be broadly appealing, and he says it would provide an economic incentive for consumers to curb their dependence on fossil fuels. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on!
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you, Sharon. America Network, 27 minutes before the hour. Boy, so much going on. Ralph Nader running for president. George Bush running the nation into the ground. The Democrats trying to figure out who's gonna go up against him and what are they going to do about it. What are they going to say? How's it going to work? What's going to come out of it all? Ralph and his thoughts.
Talk about it then. It was just a few minutes before he was going to go to the press conference to announce.
That was with Howard Dean. It was wrong clue. Anyhow, it's a confusing time, an interesting time. What, the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We do that. Tony from Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, by the way. Hey, Tony, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
How you doing?
I am great, Tony. How are you today?
I'm trying to make it. Thank you so much. Mine's going to be short and sweet. I hear these people come out of the, you know, they have the right to do the Greens or the Independents or whatever, though, but for them to be disingenuous, that, you know, the last, I think, two or three phone calls, they say the guy from Vermont was saying, the Green Party was saying that he did see a difference between the two parties. It's downright lying. I mean, I think he was being kind to him, and all these other people are saying, well, we're just voting our conscience. Well, let's see what conscience has just done for the last 4 years. Yeah. It's almost like they're saying, if you don't do what we're doing, you know, what we want you to do, we're quietly going to hold a rubber knife to your throat until, you know, there's too much blood in the street. You're going to have to see it our way.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything like this since the McKinley administration. I mean, Ulysses S. Grant administration. We, you know, Nixon was corrupt, but he wasn't in a corrupt, you know, corrupt right. in a way that brought the that was threatening to bring down the nation. Ronald Reagan really was the one who started this, but people didn't realize. People thought it was just, you know, nice rhetoric. Oh, right. you know, yeah, well, conservative. Yeah, let the rich people. You know, it's a, let those mergers and acquisitions. So Michael Milken makes a few billion. Greed is good. Yes, indeed. We and you had people like Ross Perot standing on the side, and I'm no fan of Ross Perot, but I got to tell you, he was right about this. And you've got people standing on the side going, wait a minute, you guys. We have, you know, for 200 years in this country, we had rules against something called monopoly. You can't do it. In fact, we made a board game out of it so people could figure out what it was so that they could spot it so they could stop it. And
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Absolutely. I mean, they said, look, I mean, he done cut and slash. I mean, even the Pentagon did an audit on Halliburton and said, you stole $61 million from us.
Yeah, in just one instance.
There's one instance.
There's a few more.
I mean, what more do they have to do? I mean, this facetiousness is the same way I'm just voting for my conscience. I mean, I'm practical. I know good and well. Democracy was not born in 200 years. It has to be perfected.
Yes,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing process, Tony. You're absolutely right. And we're, you know, we've been figuring it out, and it's gone in fits and starts. And frankly, the direction up until fairly recently, the direction has been fairly forward. But I think that with Bill Clinton and the DLC and this whole thing with NAFTA, GATT, and the Telecommunications Act, and then George Bush. Building on that, of course, and starting with Reagan, you know, and his war on organized labor, firing Pat, you know, the PATCO, the air traffic controllers, who are on strike, and suspending enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, the conservative agenda is now obvious to everybody. I mean, it has come full bore. We are seeing it, and we are seeing that it is about making a society like that we have seen before. I mean, you know, for Europe, in Europe, it was like this for 1,000 years. It was called the Dark Ages. This is what these people want to go back to, in the Middle Ages, back to a time when power is concentrated in the hands of warlords, theocrats, those who say that God told them to do it, and the rich. It's called feudalism, the conservative agenda is an anti-democracy agenda. It's just that simple.
Exaggeration. You're not exaggerating what you're saying. Matter of fact,
no, I'm not.
Just look at, are you better? Ask them, are you better than you were 4 years ago? And I'll leave. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for calling, Tony. Yeah, and of course, that's the symptom of it. That's the symptom of it. In a democracy like we have, and as we have developed over the years, and in many ways as was envisioned by the founders, you have a system that holds as one of its highest values the idea of having what today we would call a middle class. You know, what back when the country was founded was, you know, referred to as the general welfare. You know, one of the reasons that we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common benefit, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. What does that mean? It means building a strong middle class. It means a strong middle class is one of the essential cores of democracy. And many of the countries of Europe have figured this out. You know, in Sweden, the average CEO makes 8 to 10 times what the average worker does. In Germany, I believe it's around 15 or 20. In England, it's up to around 40 or 50. For a long time in the United States, when I was a kid, CEOs in the 1950s and 1960s, CEOs in the United States made, you know, 20, 30, 50, at the most 50 times what the average worker makes. Because common sense just says, is this guy working 50 times harder? Is anybody 50 times smarter? Why don't we pay all that money to Albert Einstein? I mean, just, you know, common sense. And we have, and that's where these civil service laws came from. In the military, the top general can't make more than 20 times the pay of the lowest buck private. At most universities, there's either a 1 to 10 or a 1 to 20 spread. And it was just sort of the unwritten rule in business. And then in the 80s, it started getting out of control. So Congress stepped in and they said, okay, we'll deal with this with the tax code. A corporation, and this is the way it is right now, actually, a corporation can only deduct a salary paid to a CEO up to the first $1 million. So what do? They figure out other ways to compensate them. They've got these stock options. They got the, you know, corporate jet. They buy their apartment. They just, and of course, sometimes they just say, hey, screw it. We'll pay the tax. We got so many tax shelters now. We don't have to worry about it. We don't pay no stinking taxes. The Supreme Court is another story I wanted to get to here about enemy combatants. But the middle class in America is at risk, and it's at risk because the middle class is the bulwark of democracy. Alexis de Tocqueville came over here. In 1834, as I recall. I think his book was published in 1836. And spent a little less than a year traveling around the United States, looking at the United States and writing about this amazing experiment. I mean, the whole world was looking at this going, is this possible? They tried it in France. I mean, the French overthrew the king, you know, there was and it turned into a terror. It turned into a terrible thing. And then Napoleon came out, you know, all over Europe, there, you know, is it possible? And there were these major democratic reforms in England. As I recall, it was in 1834 when England really pretty much became a democracy. And many other European countries were looking at going to a parliamentary system where the king really didn't have the power. They were the head of state, but not the head of government any longer. And de Tocqueville came over and he wrote this book called Democracy in America, which is still in print, in which he echoed Thomas Jefferson's point made over and over and over again that you must have a well-educated and well-informed populace if you are going to have democracy. And that's why Jefferson created the University of Virginia as a free university, as he thought all universities should be. That all education should be absolutely, because this is the cornerstone of the whole thing. Of course, Ronald Reagan took that apart, the last pieces of it in California with the University of California system, those of you who are old enough to remember. We have so much to return to, the foundations of America, the golden age of the American middle class in the United States from the mid-1940s to 1980 when Ronald Reagan started taking apart the middle class. From that time until today, the average wage earning capacity, the average person has been in steady decline, and now under George Bush, it is in free fall, absolutely in free fall. Can the Democrats turn it around? Is that going to happen? Will John Kerry make it happen? 17 minutes past the hour, this is Tom Hartman, and Steve from Oklahoma has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, hey, Steve, welcome to the program. What are your thoughts on this?
I just had a question. I listened to the answer off the air. What do you think John Kerry would actually do different from the Bush administration to address the concerns about what you just went over with the last caller?
Which specific concerns are those?
Oh, like the the control that the corporations have and the lack of support for unions in the country and just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just an idea. Kerry would do different from the current administration.
Yeah. That's a very good question, Steve. And we're working right now to try and get on this program a representative of the Edwards campaign and the Kerry campaign so that we can put these hard questions to them. Because I'm hearing a lot of generalities. And the fact that Kerry was just endorsed by a couple of different unions gives me some encouragement. Because these guys don't. They do their homework, but only time will tell. I mean, a lot of us thought that Bill Clinton was a good guy, and then he went and signed NAFTA and GATT. And I don't think that in his wildest nightmares, Bill Clinton expected the consequence that this nation has gotten from signing NAFTA and GATT. As smart as he is, he missed it. He absolutely missed it. But as to what John Kerry is going to do, I don't know. I am not a Democrat, and I am not here to promote the agenda of John Kerry, although I would be glad to communicate it to you if I could clearly find it nailed down. We spent a fair amount of time on their website last week, talked about this on the air, Kerry and Edwards, and you know, they've been here and they've been there. And, of course, these are the things that the Republicans are going to be attacking them on. What's he actually going to do? I'm not sure. What I do know is that the Democratic Party is as corrupt as they have been over the years. I mean, you know, the Democratic Party was at the head of segregation for many years in the United States, basically from the Civil War to the 1960s. And the Democratic Party has had a history, just like the Republicans in many ways, of being embedded with corporations. Nonetheless, we have a two-party system in this country, at least at the federal level. And in a lot of states now, we're getting instant runoff voting. We're never going to have proportional representation. It requires changing state and federal constitutions. But instant runoff voting is a good, you know, step in that direction. And, you know, a positive thing. But we've got this two-party system. And it's increasingly looking to me like the Republicans have so completely sold out to the conservatives that, you know, maybe it's a good thing if a Democrat doesn't say a lot that's specific. You know, George Bush got elected by not saying anything particularly specific. Well, I'm a compassionate conservative. Huh? What are you going to do? Well, we'll think about that. We're not going to be the bully of the world. Huh? But, you know, specifics, no. Al Gore had specifics. We're going to put Social Security in a lockbox. Yeah, George Bush has been spending Social Security money. You know, the budget deficits would be millions higher if it wasn't for the fact that the Social Security money is being spent to reduce that deficit number. Kyle in Florida is on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Hey, Kyle, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
My question is about Ralph Nader.
Yes, sir.
If he's going to run for the 2004 presidency, do you think he'll take votes away from the Democrat or actually help out the liberal party, the Green Party, actually getting some votes?
I think it's going to be a wash, frankly. If you'd asked me this a week ago, I would have said I think it'll be a bad thing if Ralph runs, even if he runs as a Green, even if the Green Party embraces him. Now, frankly, I've had a few days to think about it. I've talked with a few folks. I've, you know, been listening in, looking around, mostly just kind of checking out my own thinking on this. And my sense of it is that Ralph is not going to be a factor in this election. I really don't think he is.
Okay.
He'll get some votes. There are some people who are ideological purists on both sides, both on the right and on the left. I mean, the Republicans, there are Republicans who are dealing with this, conservatives who are dealing with their angst over the fact that a true conservative would not have an unbalanced budget like George Bush has, wouldn't expand, wouldn't do anything to enhance Medicare. They don't realize, of course, that Bush is trying to destroy Medicare with this Medicare bill. They bought the PR. And they're going to hold their nose and vote for Bush because partisanship ends up winning out. I think it's going to be a wash, Kyle. What's your sense? What are you hearing down there in Florida?
Oh, actually, I'm in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, not Florida, but that's all right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm a college student, so I get a lot of mixed reviews. I'm a liberal, but I also vote for Democrats also, but I don't know. I'm a big Ralph Nader fan, but I just see that he pulls votes away from the Democrats like he did in 2000 a little bit.
Yeah. What disappointed me was, you know, if he had said that he was going to do something like David Cobb has suggested and others in the Green Party, that he would run a strategic campaign or he would not run. I mean, there's basically 40 states of the 50 states. There's basically 40 states that we know right now who's going to win. Because there's just, you know, the way that the apportionment has been handled and this, that, the other thing. We basically know in those 40 states, nobody even has to campaign, and we know who's going to win. And then there's this 10 or 12 states that are the swing states, that are the states that are in play, the states that could go one way or the other. And if Nader had simply said, you know, in the swing states, in those states where I might harm Democratic candidate, I'm just not going to campaign, then I think he actually would have made friends, and a lot of people would have respected it, but he didn't. I think he has blown a huge opportunity here by trying to be so ideologically pure. Kyle, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 10 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds.
and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pants sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board.
The doorbell rang and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves, and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
Bring
bringing you uncommon sense. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Nation's governors meeting, as I mentioned earlier, in Washington, D.C., and they have some questions for Mr. Bush. Where are the jobs? Governors are demanding answers on jobs. Bush's Council of Economic Advisers predicted that with passage of the president's tax bill, there would be 1,836,000 jobs created through from June through December of 2003. Did you notice any of those jobs? Well, now, I know that there are cons on various right-wing TV talk shows running around going, oh, yeah, sure. Well, you got to look at the household survey, not the government figures. So there are a few jobs that have been created. Right. Governor Jennifer Granholm said Mr. Bush's tax cuts, quote, were not producing new jobs in her state, end quote. That's in Michigan. According to Governor Tom Vilsack of Iowa, quote, President Bush does not appear to have an understanding of the pain caused by unemployment, end quote. Well, when you're born a multimillionaire into a family of multimillionaires and you get to start three oil companies that all lose money and go bankrupt and never find oil with the help of other millionaires, some named Bin Laden, I guess it is hard to understand the pain of employment. We should probably have a little compassion for George W. and for his situation. The governors also want some answers on the war on terror. They want to know how come the funding for local needs. The police is being cut. Why are the National Guardsmen, who are supposed to defend the states, being sent off to Iraq? What's going on here? 22% of our forces that are in Iraq, of our forces in Iraq, are made up of the soldiers that are supposed to be defending the states, leaving America undefended. What a mess. Special thanks today to Shar Jones, one of the finest human beings on earth, for running the board and for engineering our program today in Detroit. Thanks to Louise Hartman for producing it here in Vermont. Thanks to Brad Walrod, New York City, for editing our music. And thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up and hanging out these 3 hours. And thanks to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog